This is the worst podcast I've ever been on.
These guys are shit. It's true. It's true.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Our traveling fanboys. Welcome, Place to Be Nation listeners, to the Hard Traveling Fanboys. We are in the L-shaped studio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I'm Greg Phillips. With me, as always, is the illustrious Nick Duke. Nick, how are you on this fine eve?
Well, I'm decent. It's been a fair week, as they say. You know, this past weekend was not too shabby.
Decent.
That's fair.
Well, have you ever gotten the feeling, Nick? You ever get that, you just wake up one day and get that feeling that we just need to keep the streak alive by any means necessary?
Oh, let's see. I've had that feeling for, let's not reveal how long I've had that feeling for.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're taking keeping the streak alive to new levels this week, because we're going to give you a very abbreviated edition of the longest running
weekly
episodic
comic book podcast
in all of Place to Be Nation.
Yep.
We are here to bring you a very special episode of Countdown, and by very special, I mean very bad.
It's going to be awful.
You know, we're not. This
is probably legitimately going to be our shortest episode of all time for a variety of reasons, both by design and by the fact that the chosen topic is kind of hard to really, like, expound upon. You know, it's kind of like, how much can you really say about this topic?
Right. And so we're not going to have a back half of the show. The white meat babyface Jumpin' Jim Ross could not make it to the studios today. So we're gonna be pretty brief with this one, but we're gonna keep the streak alive, damn it. It's very important that we continue keeping the streak alive. And the one thing you can't accuse us of is false advertising. Well, you can't accuse us of that. We've done it many times. But in this case, you can't accuse us of false advertising, because by God, we're telling you up front this episode's gonna suck. So when this episode sucks, I don't wanna hear any Richards out there on their Twitter type into JR's BBQ talking about how our show sucks and it's terrible and we're lazy.
Quote tweeting us,
you know,
to respond to our show rather than just replying to a tweet like the rest of America.
We don't want any of that. Because we're telling you the show's going to suck, damn it. And
you may be thinking to yourself, how's that any different? What's different about this?
Yeah, to which we
your other episodes.
Which you say, go jump off a well, huh?
To which we say, that's fair. That's a fair criticism. Yeah. It's right there at the beginning of the show. This is the worst podcast we've ever been on,
yeah. And they haven't even been on our podcast.
No. They are kind of, like, in theory now.
They feel confident enough to say that about our podcast. So,
by the way, those are the AEW World Tag Team
Champions. Absolutely. By the way, do you think that that's because of the HTF rub? I do.
Oh, I would assume so. I think there's no doubt that Tony Khan heard that podcast. Heard them on our podcast and said, "My God, look at that! We gotta get the straps on these guys."
Goddamn, pal!
Goddamn, pal! I don't know what Tony Khan sounds like.
That was Jim Cornette. Goddamn, pal, motherfucker! We gotta put the title on these motherfuckers.
You know, Greg, if I strapped a, never mind.
Let's not go there. in any event, we are here to talk about the worst costumes ever in comic books, in our estimations.
Yeah.
When
we say in our estimations, we mean by looking over other people's lists and kind of picking and choosing
from
based
those.
Off
yes,
that.
Because such is the nature of this week that I did not want to spend any mental energy on this. So I just gleaned a bunch of, not to be confused with Maggie and Glean, I gleaned a few lists from the internet, and I cycled through a few that I remembered, put them in a list, and kind of narrowed them down to five. But these are just costumes that stand out because they're ugly, their designs suck, and if you like these costumes, you're an idiot, and I don't like you. That's an exaggeration. But a lot of these costumes are just terribly, universally regarded as terrible. Some of them are not universally regarded as terrible, but are terrible, regardless of what some people may tell you. So, with that being said, Nick, what do you say we do away with any of the rigmarole, and we get, I don't know what that means, and we get right into, what we're here to talk about, shall we?
Let's do it.
Before we get cracking in our top fives, do you have any honorable mentions, bad costumes that almost made your top five?
I'm trying to remember because I don't have my full preliminary list in front of me. I know Elect oh, I'm dying. Hold on.
Well,
excuse me.
1987-2019, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. That's right. I forgot my train of thought. Electric Blue Superman was one that I had on my preliminary list. I considered Electric Blue Superman for inclusion. I also considered, I'm trying to remember some of the others, virtually any costume from the story Avengers The Crossing, which saw all the Avengers get new costumes, and literally every one of them were terrible. The Thor one was especially terrible, in my estimation. That was on there. I'm going to be honest, the original, like, 1940s Robin costume with the pixie boots I'm not even going to call them short shorts, just the glorified underwear. That would have been an honorable mention for mine as well. So there's a few. I'm sure there were others that I considered, but none are springing to mind at the moment.
I have a couple of honorable or dishonorable mentions, huh?
Yeah.
That I want to put on here. One of which was almost going to make my list until it didn't, which is the 90s Dr. Fate, just called Fate, I believe. So this costume involved an Ankh being painted or tattooed over his eye, a la Raven, and just the most 90s thing of all time. It's like, let's take this classic sort of superhero looking character, and how can we make him cool? I know, a lot of nonsensical designs, a lot of clashing colors. Long hair, angry facial expressions. In fact, I want you to go to your Google machine here and type in 90s Dr. Fate DC Comics and just look at some of these images that pop up. The first one, in fact, where he's shouting, "But the doctor is out." He has a giant gold shoulder pad only on one side of his body, along with what appears to be an arm wrapped in yellow athletic tape. On the other hand, he's got a black glove that rolls up the side of his arm, and a gold gauntlet, and he's holding a sword. Of course, as everybody had a sword in the 90s, and he's got pouches strapped all over his red unitard, and he's got Harley Quinn black and red hair. It's very odd. It's not a good look at all. It looks very, very. I love the 90s. Don't get me wrong, but this looks like all the bad things in the 90s rolled into one. So that was an honorable mention for me. Another honorable mention, I'm going to give this a twofer, any X-Men character that wears a stupid X mask. And that includes the Cyclops redesign from a couple years ago where he had the X helm that he wore. I hated that because I didn't understand it. I was like, why don't his X do his optic blasts now come out in the shape of an X? I don't know. I didn't like it. And the new from the Jonathan Hickman reboot, the Professor X wearing the Cerebro helmet. Don't like that look either with the black onesie.
You know, I've always hated every Cyclops costume that has featured what I call the condom mask, where it's just the rounded thing at the top, and he looks like a giant dick. Essentially, I hate that. I hate all of them.
The original Mr. Terrific from the Golden Age. If you look at this guy's Greg, costume.
How many honorable mentions do you have?
Really bad. This is the last one, actually. A lot of really bad costumes. But this original Golden Age Mr. Terrific, very lame. Fair play written on the front of his green tunic or whatever it is. Not good. But with that being said, let's kick off our list. Nick, you're number five.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a list of, you know, a negative list of us, you know, just shitting on stuff without me being somewhat controversial and attitudinal and including a certain individual on my list that I have a great amount of disdain for, mainly for what he represented in the 1990s. And so number five on my worst costumes list, I'm going Kyle Rayner. Primarily the original Kyle Rayner costume. I mean, I hated everything about it. The crab mask, the minimizing the green on the costume in favor of black, even though the character is literally called Green Lantern. The reduction of the logo down to just a little chest piece right here. At times it kind of had that you know, fake ab thing going on. Just everything about this costume, I just freaking hated. They've slowly revised it over the years to make it a little bit more palatable to me. But even still, the crab mask is just stupid. Like, I mean, for all these people who want to dump on the Domino mask, like, at least it doesn't have these little stupid-looking legs hanging off of it for no apparent reason. Hate everything about it.
Very interesting. I've always kind of liked the Kyle Rayner design, oddly enough. However, I understand all of your points that you've made. They're well taken. Have you ever noticed that his crab mask looks a little bit like the mask worn by Brother Brudeye in the build-up to WrestleMania 9?
A little bit, but smaller, I would say, than that.
Yeah,
mask.
A little bit smaller than the Brother Brudeye mask, but nonetheless, much like Brother Brudeye, Kyle Rayner, for much of his history, was a useless hanger-on clinging to the legacy of far more talented people than himself.
That's fair.
Well, let's move on to my number five, and this would have placed higher, in full disclosure. Had it not been so short-lived, and had it not been specifically to serve the purpose of a story, a single story. And that is the Batman of Zur-En-Arr costume.
Mm. Yeah, this one wasn't on my list because kind of for that reason. It was literally like one issue,
yes,
so
it's a one-off.
Didn't really consider it.
And, well, it's a two-off because it dates from an issue back in the 50s, I believe, right?
Fair, yeah.
And was revived.
But I think we're both specifically thinking of like the homeless Bruce Wayne stitched patchwork one from Grant Morrison's god-awful story.
Yes, from Grant Morrison's run on Batman. I'm not sure who did this issue, who drew it, maybe one of the Kuberts. But it was just not...
Iraq, Iran, and one of the Kuberts.
And it's stupid. I mean, this is one of the low points of Grant Morrison's run, in my opinion. I know, he's honoring the past, he's tying it all into, he's tying all the continuity together. I understand this, I understand.
Voice?
I don't know what that voice was. I can't even begin to understand what that voice was. However, it's not a case of not getting it. It's a case of not liking it for me. So,
no, you can't do that with Grant Morrison. It's you either like it, Greg, or you just don't get it. Those are the only options.
Yeah, so for me, I just didn't like it. And I thought it was hideous and took me out of the story, frankly, when I was reading it. Even when I went back and read that run a little bit last year for the show, for one of the shows that we did, and it kind of took me out of it as I was reading it. I was like, I don't understand what the benefit was to the story, other than saying, look at me, I read a 1950s comic. So, didn't like it. So
isn't that all of Grant Morrison's writing career for the last like 15 years?
Well, it's a portion of it for sure. All right, so that's it for me on number five. What about number four for you, Nicholas?
Absolutely. So this was a costume I wasn't even aware of until I started doing the research for my list.
That happened to me
because you know, as you and anyone who listens to the show knows, I'm not really an X-Men aficionado. But yet, when I was out there Googling other people's opinions on the worst comic book costumes of all time, this came up time and again. And after seeing it, I have to agree. I'm going to say, help me out here, Greg. I'm not sure the era. I know it was from
early
Claremont run on X-Men.
Yeah,
early to mid-80s. It was the time period when Magneto had become the leader of the X-Men and the headmaster of Xavier's school for gifted children or gifted youngsters or whatever the hell it's called. And he did away with the classic, iconic, near-perfect Magneto costume in favor of this lighter purple deal with a giant M across the entire costume, elbow-length gloves, and knee-high boots, and no helmet. And the entire thing is just awful. It looks like a really bad, like, music video costume from the 80s or something that somebody might wear. It is... It is the antithesis of everything cool about the Magneto costume. Like, stripped down and altered to a degree that makes him look utterly ridiculous. So, never actually read this in a book, but I don't have to. I've seen it. This is awful.
It's really, really bad. I think I've only...
Why would anyone wear gloves up to your... Like, what is the... Basically, only his bicep, like his upper fore, like his upper shoulder area is bare, and that's it.
I can't tell you the practical application of this costume. I remember running across it in a story that I read from that, because this is before my time of reading X-Men, so I've only read it in back issues. I read a back issue that had this costume in it, and I was taken aback. This was many, many years ago, and I was taken aback. Like, what the hell were they thinking? Magneto looks so lame. And he would look – I think he changed that costume and had something else in the crossover of Fantastic Four versus the X-Men, or Fantastic Four X-Men crossover in the late 80s that I've read. And he has a really lame costume in that as well, if memory serves. But yeah, not a good look for the Master of Magnetism, to be sure. Well, let's stick with the X-Men, shall we? Because my number four is almost Slayton to garner us a little bit of hatred on the Twitter machine, a little bit of doubts on the Twitter machine, because my number four costume is the original Havoc costume of the X-Men.
There we go. I like it. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, as I understand it, this costume was designed by the great Jim Steranko, and yet absolutely sucks. So, Nick, you've encountered this costume in your award-winning podcast, The Marvel Age.
I have, but I am going to withhold comment for fear of garnering the ire of fake Steranko. I don't want that smoke, as the kids say.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't join the Street Profits, that's for sure. No, I was... I have been aware of this original costume for some time. Now,
that being said, it sucks.
Now, in all fairness, the overall design of the suit is not that bad as far as like the onesie, so to speak, the unitard aspect. That's fine, I suppose. Unspectacular. It's just all black, just solid black. What kills this costume, what makes this costume untenable, unrealistic, and annoying, is the headpiece. So he's wearing, as you put it, the dick mask of Cyclops that goes over his head. He's got a little like cowl of sorts that covers him, that exposes his eyes and his nose and his mouth. But over top of his cowl is this three-pronged spiral metal-looking thing. I can't really describe it except that it looks a little bit like a cheesy crown that a WWE guy would have that just won the King of the Ring. And yet it I don't understand the purpose of it. I don't understand why it looks that way. Imagining someone wearing this in real life is the most ridiculous thing in a comic book that includes a living island and a beast man that walks on the ceiling. This is the most ridiculous thing. It's trying to picture why anyone in a million years. And it's especially funny that so many people criticize 90s costumes for being impractical. What the hell is the practicality of walking around with this stupid thing on your head? So for some reason, X-Men, a lot of X-Men creators and fans love gigantic headpieces. And so there you see it in this case. It's giant. It's unwieldy. I don't like it. I don't like it. No, sir, I don't like it. And I understand that there are those that do love it, and that's completely fine. For me, it has always been a turnoff ever since the time I was a youngling, Anakin.
There it is, younglings. You like to drop that in there wherever you can.
I love younglings.
I know you do. In any event, I guess we're going to move on to my number three. And, you know, I didn't put Electric Blue Superman on there, but I had to find a way to get at least one really bad Superman design on it, and this was one I had almost forgotten about until doing my research for this list. DC, as they are wont to do from time to time, near the end of the New 52, went through one of their periods where they decided that it's time to shake up our characters. We're going to have big status quo shifts for Batman and Superman, and I believe Wonder Woman had something going on around the same time. You know, that this was the same time, Greg, when we had Jim Gordon in the Robo Bunny suit as Batman. Mm-hmm. And over in the pages of Superman, we decided that we were going to depower Superman, give him a buzz cut, have him wrap the tattered remnants of his cape around his hands so that he could beat people up and be all gritty and bloody while he did it, and just put him in a god-awful black t-shirt and blue jeans. Basically, taking everything about the character of Superman that costume should evoke and doing away with it.
Yeah.
Trying to turn Superman into a street-level, gritty vigilante that is inherently against the idea of everything the character stands for. This isn't even a good look for a character that this kind of aesthetic would actually fit, let alone for Superman. It's overthought, it is underdesigned, and just the worst, I would argue the worst Superman costume I've ever seen.
Wow, coming in hot and heavy on the new 52.
Well, see, I don't even mind the main new 52 Superman costume that everybody seems to be up in arms about, where they took away the trunks. Whatever, that doesn't bother me. But this thing from this era, so bad. Why does Superman need to have a buzz cut, stubble, and bloody knuckles wrapped up with a cape?
Yeah, like, I have a lot of thoughts on that. I think Doomsday Clock has addressed several of my thoughts on that. By outright talking about how silly it is, you know, the thinking behind it, the rationale behind it, and how flawed that is. But it was really dumb. I agree, not a good idea, and it laid the foundation for the angsty new 52 Superman that we've talked about before. It's sort of like the idea of Superman wearing armor. Like, why, you know? but nonetheless. That's a good choice, Nick. A little bit outside the box, and I like that. Well, let me go inside the box, can I, for a moment?
Mm-hmm.
You talked about the, gritty street-level, against-character costume of New 52 Superman. Well, let me give you Marvel's equivalent of Superman, and a costume that is just as tone-deaf as the one that you just mentioned when it comes to what this character stands for. In the let's go back to the 1990s, shall we, Nick? And
sure.
A little storyline where Captain America, Steve Rogers, the iconic face of the Marvel Universe in many ways, was completely paralyzed by a super soldier serum-induced illness. And so Tony Stark, his good buddy, right, Iron Man, steps in to try to save the day, to try to help his buddy out of that situation. And what worked for Nick, or for what worked for Tony, rather, Nick, was designing an exoskeleton, a suit of armor that could literally keep him alive, right? Why not do that for his best friend, for his buddy Steve Rogers? So Tony Stark gives Steve an exoskeleton that will keep him alive and allow him to continue his crime-fighting career. Now, due to the fact that he was paralyzed during this time, Steve had to have sensors implanted all over his body to operate this suit. So, thus we had, for a very brief period of time, maybe not that brief, I don't know how long it was, to be quite honest, we had what is affectionately known as Armored Captain America. He debuted in Captain America 438, April 1995, and you want to talk about stereotypically 90s? Let us take the bastion of Americana, the bastion of freedom, the bastion of all that is right and good in the world of superheroics, and let's put him in thick, scaly armor, draw gritted faces for him constantly with where he's baring his teeth in almost every shot, give him gauntlets on his hands rather than his traditional gloves. And, oh, yeah, give him a little jetpack where he can fly around if he needs to. This is a god-awful look, Nick. I don't know if you've ever seen Armored Captain America from the 90s. Just type in Armored Captain America. One of the pictures will come up of him. He's got this – it almost looks like the Dark Knight Returns Batman suit that he wears to fight Superman, you know? Mm-hmm. Just a wretched look. And the way that his – the barrel chest of the suit is. It almost looks like this was the inspiration for Rob Liefeld's rather breastular Captain America that we would see in later images. So yeah, this was an easy choice for my list. An era of comics I was not reading the Avengers. However, had I been reading the Avengers or Captain America, I would have been quite disappointed in this look, even as a kid who thought armored costumes were really cool.
Well, speaking of armored costumes, let's move on to my number two. And this is a character who is known for his armor. I mean, Iron Man, you know, arguably, if you want to look across most of his history, you could argue he has one of the best costumes in all of comics. The classic red and gold armor, I would argue, is a fantastic look. I mean, who wouldn't want to dress in all red and yellow after all? I can't think of anyone who wouldn't. Mm. But the problem is, early in the days of Iron Man, I'm going to say it, those two earliest costumes were absolute duds. I'm talking about what I refer to as the big gold turd and the big gray turd, where it was just this cylindrical shape that literally looked like a giant turd walking around doing nothing. It didn't have any design about it. We had to be told all these great things the armor could do, and you couldn't really visualize any of it when you just saw the design. It really was uninventive for a character that was supposed to be able to have all this technology at his fingertips, especially when you put him on the same page as the other Avengers. Like, you would have the color of Thor's costume or of Captain America's costume. You would have the dynamic look of the Hulk, and here is just this big blob of gray or gold. I mean, not a good look at all, and one that, thankfully, they improved on immensely over the years and still continue to add to. I mean, every Iron Man writer gets to add, an artist gets to add a new costume design to the fold, and a lot of them wind up being, you know, pretty damn good.
Yeah, I agree with this, Nick. This is a good choice. The gold one in particular,
yes,
looks really bad, and a little bit like the glowing monster from the opening of the original Scooby-Doo show, which I know is a reference that many of our listeners won't even get, but it's not a good look at all. And kudos to the movie for replicating the original costume or the original suit in the first Iron Man movie. But I'm glad they didn't try for the original gold suit in the first movie because
yes, that would have been bad.
That would have been bad. It's too big.
They had that brief little homage to it where they were like, where Jarvis showed him the suit in all gold alloy, and he was like, why don't you just throw a little Hot Rod Red in there? So, you know, we saw it for a very brief glimpse. True. But thankfully it wasn't.
Yeah, it just seems so bulky, so large. It's honestly horrifying. It makes Iron Man look like a villain rather than a hero, which I guess you could have told some interesting stories out of that, but I'm glad they did.
What about Jackass?
Hmm?
A jackass instead of a hero.
Well, yeah, that I think that's often been isn't that the source of every Captain America and Tony Stark conflict for the last 15 years?
Suppose. Is
one of them calls the other one a hero, the other one says he's a jackass.
Mm-hmm. So who would be the
hero?
Who would be the Kurt Angle?
Jackass.
Yes, Captain America is the Kurt Angle in this situation.
Captain America is the Kurt Angle, and Tony Stark is the
Cap cracked corn, and I don't care.
I don't care. Cap cracked corn, and I don't care. Cap cracked corn, and I don't care. I've got a super soldier serum. I got a super soldier serum. Cap. Cap!
Go ahead and tell him I'm great. That's
right,
Pepper.
I'm great. Anyway.
That's good.
Well, my costume, my next costume on my list is along those, not really along those lines at all, along the same lines as the last one on my list of the armored Captain America. This one also comes from the decade of my beloved 1990s. And it's a costume that, again, I was not very aware of until we started doing this this list, because I wasn't reading this comic book at this time when this happened. But it comes to us from the pages of Wonder Woman in the mid-1990s. And Diana, by the way, had a couple of costume changes on the year that could have easily made this list. But this is the one that stood out above all as the worst to me. So apparently, in the mid-1990s, a storyline came out where Wonder Woman was forced to relinquish her title as Wonder Woman and her outfit to her fellow Amazon named Artemis. after a new contest was held to determine who should be Wonder Woman. So Artemis became Wonder Woman, and Diana was left feeling somewhat attitudinal about the whole situation, Nick, if you can imagine. And so she struck out on her own.
And somebody was feeling attitudinal in the 90s in comics? I can't believe it.
It's hard to believe. So Diana took on a new look. She cut her hair shorter. She changed the colors of her outfit to emphasize more black, if you can believe that, Nick.
And, in the 90s, no.
And her clothes became a lot more, shall we say, revealing. She began wearing a leather bra, as you can see in any image. So her costume is a leather bra with a strap. I don't know if it's a gun strap or a cleavage strap or what it is in the middle of it. She's got a what appears to be a belt with two belt buckles on it, bicycle shorts that would make Shawn Michaels proud, and a short leather jacket with her symbol on it. To go along with her what appear to be her bracelets that she was wearing before, and of course, because it's the 90s, black gloves. And this is not a great look, Nick. This looks like I said, Shawn Michaels refereeing a match wearing a bra after enhancement surgery and a leather jacket. Not good. And Diana would wear this for some time, not a long time, but long enough that it kind of has become synonymous with bad Wonder Woman costumes. And if you, again, this is something that if you put it in the Google machine, 1990 Wonder Woman bicycle short costume. She's also drawn to look extremely, almost like one of Darkseid's Furies during this era. Very angry looking, gritty, constantly frowning, which is another trend of the 90s costumes as we've seen. So this is certainly earning its spot at number two. It begs the question, Nick, my God, what could be worse?
What could be worse? That's a great question. For me, what's worse than just about anything? You know, Greg, really, I could just say Hawkeye costumes if I wanted to. Because let's be honest. Up until the recent Matt Fraction Hawkeye run, I think all of his costumes have been really bad. Even the one that people most identify him with the headpiece, you know, and the purple from head to toe.
We're biased against headpieces, though.
It's a pretty bad costume. His earliest costume is pretty bad. Clint Barton, the Ronin costume was okay. Clint Barton, when he was Goliath, briefly back in the late 60s, had a weird midriff thing going on that was really bad. But nothing quite beats when he decided to stop being Goliath and go back to Hawkeye. He decided to change up his costume, as you would. But I'm not really sure why he decided to turn it into a purple sundress, which is what essentially it is. Because when Clint Barton went back to being Hawkeye in the 70s, he changed into something that is akin to the Ozymandias costume that is shown in the flashback sequences of Watchmen, except without the leggings underneath. So he has this dress thing, this purple dress, that cuts off just below the knee and just bare legs from there down.
He basically dressed like some of the people on our college campus right now.
Yes, some of the females on your college campus right now. And, you know, I have this image of, like, let's say they were fighting, you know, the Avenger, the Marvel villain Whirlwind. Let's say they were fighting Whirlwind. Does his dress get blown up, you know, Marilyn Monroe style, and he's having to hold it down? Like, how do you fight
it's real and it's spectacular.
I mean, does he ever go commando underneath it and just let it dangle? I don't know. Maybe it feels good, the breeze getting through there. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's how he aims his arrows. He can feel the breeze blowing across his Johnson in his dress. That's how he knows what the wind speed is at any given moment. I don't know. This is one of the weirdest designs for a male costume of all time, and just awful.
I will see your Hawkeye sundress, and I will raise you my number one selection, Nick, because this is one that I discovered only in doing research for this article. I had never seen it before. And quite frankly, I prefer not having seen it. So, Nicholas, I'm gonna take your Hawkeye sundress, and I'm gonna invite you to go to Google right now and type in "Cosmic Boy Corset." I want you to type it in, and I want to get your live reaction.
Yeah, but I mean, aren't stupid costumes kind of par for the course for the Legion?
Oh, come on now. We're not trying to draw that much fire, are we?
I don't see it. Where is it?
Look in the
Cosmic Boy corset images. Wait a minute, is he bare chested?
Yes.
Yes. Is that a costume?
That's a costume.
Wait, how? Like
he's got a so, and here's Cosmic Boy.
How does that even work? Like how? There's nothing to hold it up. It doesn't even work.
Yes, clothing. This is the whole reason for putting this as number one on my
All
list.
All it does is cover his nipples. That's the only thing it does.
And here's the joy of this costume. So Cosmic Boy at one point
leaves his treasure trail uncovered. Presumably you're going to imagine he has a trail of hair from his belly button down to his pubes, and it's just hanging out there in the open.
He's got what appears to be a corset that covers his only the side parts of his.
No, because a corset. That's why I'm confused. You keep calling it a corset. A corset has strings. This has no strings.
And he's wearing short trunks on top of it. So it's very revealing costume. Here's the backstory on it that I just discovered on Wikipedia.
What?
So,
why?
So here's where the here's where it comes in. For a period in the late 1970s, he was portrayed in a costume designed by Mike Grell, which was essentially a black bustier with black gloves and boots. With bare arms, shoulders, chest, and legs.
But weird gloves for some reason.
Cosmic Boy would eventually return to a close variation of his original costume a few years later.
But with pink, apparently.
Oh. Now, apparently, Cosmic Boy has had some other unique costumes. Because at one point, he becomes Polestar. In which he wears a black...
That explains a lot.
A black and purple bodysuit with a stripe up the side and a black cowl.
Absolutely.
In the post-Zero Hour Legion, he wore a version of his original costume, but with lavender as the primary color instead of pink. Anyway, so this... Folks, if you've never seen this costume, you need to type in Cosmic Boy Corset or Cosmic Boy Bustier.
It looks like something they would wear in an S&M dungeon, like in a leather dungeon. It looks like something the character Mr. Slave would wear on South Park.
The first appearance of this costume, by the way, it says editor's note. What's new? Uniforms for Cosmic Boy and Colossal Boy. That's what's new. And he looks so proud of this new costume. He's like puffing his chest out. He's very, very happy with this costume. Oh, Lord. I don't think there's any topping this one, Nick. I'm confident in this selection. So I really I have nothing else to say on this matter. If you guys have some great, terrible costumes you want to nominate, you want to throw out there that we didn't talk about or pile on the ones that we did, tweet us. I'm at gphillips8652. He is at nickduke87, or you can take it to the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page. We would love to have your feedback on there about bad comic book costumes. I'm sure we'll have some disagreements on some of ours, Kyle Rayner, Havoc, etc. Bring it on, because we're ready for it. So anyway, I want to thank all of you for listening. I want to thank Nick for joining me as always. On this week's HTF, the streak lives. We'll be back and we'll do better next time, hopefully. And anyway, so hang in there, everybody. Nick, any message for our loyal listeners before we sign off for the night?
No, we'll be back next week with more goodness. JR will be back with us. We'll be back in the full swing of things next week.
Yep, absolutely.
Actually, wait a minute. No, we won't. Next week is a giant size edition.
No, I thought it was the week after. No, maybe.
Hold on a moment. Yeah. Let me consult the hard traveling calendar.
Well, I think you're right, Nick. I believe you're right. Next week is the giant size.
Oh, God, say it to me again, slower and sexier.
I think that you are right, Nick.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, good. Good.
So anyway, yeah, so next week we'll be back with an even lazier episode, as it turns out.
Next week will be The Best of Jim Ross, Volume 2. I know everybody's been looking forward to that, another compilation show from us where we don't have to record anything new outside of an intro that we may or may not record right after this podcast, so go ahead and not get it out of the way.
Well, with that being said, folks, be on the lookout for good old JR next week. We hope you have a great weekend, and indeed.
God, the rundown. We're going to have 3 weeks of rundown to cover. Oh, God. I just thought about that.
Well, that's true. Well, anyway, we hope you have a good weekend. We hope you have great holidays coming up, Thanksgiving, whatever you may be celebrating the next week. So, anyway, thanks for listening. We will be back next week.
Hard traveling fanboys.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to be Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the PlaceToBeNation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The PlaceToBeNation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
DC for you listeners, hey, it's your energetic manager, Todd Weber. We've got lots of great shows on Place to Be Nation this week, starting with the Pop Feed, the Starcastic Four, including myself, are back with the latest episode of the Marvel Age podcast. We continue our look at roughly one-third of the most significant Marvel's output throughout the year 1972. Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, Avengers, lots of great reading there. On Looking Forward, Looking Back Sports, the Cowboy and John D'Amato look back at the recent MLB season and look ahead to the newest NBA season. Go Sacramento Kings. Hard traveling fanboys go off the page and look at the 1974 movie Wonder Woman, made for ABC television, starring Kathy Lee Crosby and Ricardo Montalban. DC for You, that's this show. We continued our Green Lantern month by taking a deep dive into the beginnings of the Four Corpsmen. Hal Jordan, Guy Gardner, John Stewart, and Kyle Rayner. This week in the NFL hits every week. Roger and Johnny recapping the last set of games, previewing the upcoming weekend's batch. Siblings Kevin and Mary host the Brother / Sister Rewatch podcast. Always talking about The Office. Good stuff. On the newest Diamond Conversations, another new show on Place to Be Nation Pop. Fifth episode, Chad B. host goes one-on-one with author J. David Herman, who wrote the book Almost Yankees, the summer of 1981, and the greatest baseball team you've never heard of, which is about the 1981 Columbus Clippers. In a Place to Be Nation Pop special edition, Andy Atherton, Todd Weber, that's me, and Scott Criscola break down the brackets and matchups for the greatest sitcom of all time tournament. In another Place to Be Nation Pop special, Jason Sherman, Andy Atherton, and Miranda Berthold break down the launch of the new streaming service, Disney+. We've got the greatest sitcom tournament coming up starting Monday, November 25th. Like the page on Facebook, Place to Be Nation's Greatest Sitcom Tournament. Like it, vote. Over on the wrestling feed, Body Press Your Luck, the show I did the theme song for, haha, or at least produced it. I kind of cut and pasted some stuff. So, Place to Be Nation's first ever wrestling trivia game show. Hosts JT Rosero and Jordan Duncan welcome Ryan Everett, Neil Trauma, and Logan Krausland to battle it out. Spoiler alert, one player did very well. Two players did not. If you want to be on the show, reach out. We'll get you on. Latest episode of the Mothership Place to Be podcast, JT and Scott are joined by Jennifer Smith to review the MSG house show from February 1990. We got the main event, looking at 2002 TNA's 20th pay-per-view. Over on New Wrestling Warzone, JT and Chad dive into Raw and Nitro from February 5th, 1996. Jenny and the Gems explore the Hidden Gems Vault with a look at the Great American Bash Tour from Greensboro, 1988. We got a new show called With This Ring. Husband and wife, Ryan and Cindy, look at five matches and discuss where they place in Ryan's GWWE match list. We got another episode of Place to Be Nation Extreme Three-Way Dance. JT, John, and Jenny look at the Hostile City Showdown from ECW. Lots of great stuff. Check out our website every day, especially Tuesday with hot takes talking about college football. And we got the Wednesday Walk Around the Web, Glenn Butler. Boom. Shop for yourself or others by going to our PlaceToBeNation.com page and click on our Amazon banner. All right, I gotta go. DC for you.